So how many people here, before we start, how many people are going to do the retreat? Okay. So most everybody, good. There may be some people that, I think 26 or so people have signed up, so that's a good number. I'm gonna guide you through, the 9-round breathing that we're going to do during the retreat, and it's really more like Vaz breathing. You know, people may know what that is, but how many have done the 9-round breathing where you hold the breath when you breathe in both nostrils and you do that? How many people? But most people know that. Okay, good. So, and we're gonna. I get it confused. I need to go back to my book, but. Usually, you try to imagine they're two knot. They're called nadis or channels. They're not anything that you could find in a gross anatomy lab, but they start at the nostrils and they go back like an umbrella handle, come down, and they run on either side of the. They're like maybe the size of a straw, I guess. On either side of the central channel, which is called a shishuma, which, you know, we're going to visualize as starting at the crown of the head up here, and that, you know, going all the way down in front of the spine like that. So anyway, we're going to breathe in the left nostril. I better get this right. I don't want to lie, because I don't want to have to change it in a week. In this practice, breathe only through your nose. Keep your mouth closed. Inhale and exhale slowly and naturally and completely, but a little bit more strongly in the middle of the breath. This is Lama Yeshe's commentary on this practice. Then at the beginning and end. We say that the pattern of each breath resembles the shape of a barley grain, which is pointed at the ends and wide in the middle. We do not use the forceful method of breathing found in some of the practices of Hindu yoga. There are many psychic energy channels in the body. Here we visualize the three main ones. The central channel is a transparent tube of, in the nature of light, about the width of your little finger, in diameter, running straight down the center of your body from your crown chakra. Sometimes crown chakra is here, but I think he's talking here. From the crown chakra to the base of your spine, just in front of your spinal column. The right and left channel are also transparent tubes of light, but are narrower than the central channel. They run from your nostrils up toward the crown chakra. Remember, like the umbrella, curve around like an umbrella handle to run down alongside the central channel and parallel to it to a point about 4 finger breaths below the navel, where it curves inward and joins the central channel. So you kind of have to visualize this. And in some of the, you know, more advanced tantric practices, it's real important. Particularly one called Duma, but it's like your navel's here and 4 finger breaths down here. So this is usually how we put our hands. The left hand and the right's on top of that, and then the fingers touch up at the navel. Okay? Alright, so, the right and left channels are transparent tubes of light. In the nature of light, but are narrower than the central channel. They run from your nostrils up toward the crown chakra, then curve over like an umbrella handle, run down alongside the central channel, parallel to it to a point 4 finger breaths below the level of your navel, where they curve inward and join the central channel. So you got the picture, right? From the nostrils going down and then joining the central channel 4 finger breaths below the navel. Having visualized these channels, first breathe in through your left nostril slowly, then slightly more forcefully, then slowly again. Visualize the air enters the left channel, filling it completely, passes down, crosses into the right channel, up through it, and out the right nostril. Got that? So you don't really have to occlude your nostril, but you could do that if you wanted to. But you can. This is more visualization than anything. So you visualize that the air, even though it's coming in both nostrils, it's coming down the left side, and it goes into the from the left channel into the right channel, and then it'll come out. All right, visualize the air enters the left channel, feeling it completely passing down across into the right channel, up through it, and out the right nostril. This air pushes out all the energy and impressions of your desire and attachment, and these are pushed out beyond the Earth's gravitational field, out of the solar system, disappearing forever. You do this three times. So the first time, you know, we breathe in. Again, like Lama Yeshe says, if you're very skilled, you can refine it. But, you know, you slowly, the beginning of the breath is more slowly and then a little bit more forcefully and then more slowly. But you bring it down and it comes back out and it comes out the right nostril. And that's all the negative energy of attachment going out the right nostril. Then concentrate fully on the passage of the air through the channels, letting your mind become one with the movement of the air energy. Don't think about your neighbor, what he's doing, or anything else. Do not regard your channels as physical, made of flesh and blood. Remember, you're visualizing yourself in the pure aspect, and the channels are in the nature of consciousness. But since you're not holding... Anyway, this has to do with divine pride. I'll say a little bit. Well, I'll say something about it now. One of the things you do some people here have had High Shiva Tantra initiation. So if you have, one of your commitments is to always, 24/7, see yourself as the deity, right? See yourself as a pure being. Well, not many people are good at that. But the Lama Yeshe is just pointing out that when you're doing these kinds of practices and purification practices, you can still visualize yourself as your yidam or your tutelary, your deity, but you drop the what's called divine pride, the sort of feeling that, you know, I am, you know, Tara, or I am Chenrezig, or I am Haruka, or I am whatever. So he's just mentioning that. And so when you do purification, a deity wouldn't need to be purified. All right, you repeat this exercise three times, now breathing through the right nostril, expelling the air through the left. As it goes down through the right channel and up through the left, it pushes out all the energy and impressions of hatred and aversion. Whatever makes you feel dark and uncomfortable, these also pass out of the solar system and vanish into emptiness. Again, this time, in the right side, you know, as you breathe in, and you visualize the air going, passing over to the left channel, back out the left nostril, and this is all the negative energy of hatred and aversion, right? So the first time, breathing in the left, out the right, we're breathing out the negative energy of attachment and clinging desire and that sort of thing. This time, we're breathing out the negative energy of, in the left side, we're breathing out aversion and anger. Now breathe in. Now this is the third that we've done that three times, right? Three times left and out the right, three times right out the left. Now breathe in through both nostrils together. Bring the air down through the right and left channels to the point where they join the central channel. To help you concentrate on this, you can swallow some saliva as the air goes down. So you breathe in, again, imagining the air going through these nadis, or these little umbrella-shaped channels on both sides, and you swallow. As you breathe in, you swallow to help you concentrate as the air goes down. When the air reaches the central channel, that's four finger breaths below the navel, you tighten the inner pelvic muscles and draw energy up from the lower chakra through the central channel to the navel chakra. Everybody know what a chakra is? It's kind of an energy, it's thought of as like an energy center. We have a crown chakra and a throat chakra and a heart chakra, and this one here at the solar plexus and one at the navel and one at the tip of the sexual organ. So there's a bunch of them, but this is, we're focusing on the one at the navel. you tighten the inner pelvic muscles and draw energy up from the lower chakra through the central channel to the navel chakra, where it meets and mixes with the air energy from above. So you just breathe in. I just practice this now. You breathe in through both nostrils, and you swallow, and you imagine the air going into the central channel, and then you tighten in the pelvic muscles and just gently draw the muscles of the pelvic area up, bringing that energy up to meet with this air that you just inhaled, and it mixes with the air energy from above. You hold your breath and concentrate on the blissful energy you can feel at this point. This is important. As soon as you no longer feel comfortable, exhale naturally through your nostrils, but visualize that instead of going out, the air you've been holding goes up and dissolves inside the central channel. You do this 3 times. This exercise is very helpful for generating blissful energy within your nervous system. The experience of bliss is an integral part of the method of tantric yoga, and thus this exercise is also helpful for your tantric practice. It is this blissful energy, which is in fact your mind, and is your mind, not somebody else's, that transforms into the lotus seed and the syllable hum when you go in, when you do the practice in the sadhana. And he says, therefore, make sure that by the end of the, this is, we call this the vase meditation, because you're creating a compression from above and below at the level of the navel and holding your breath, you know. He calls it, so the vase meditation. And at the end of the vase meditation, you feel calm and blissful, and that your mind is in no way involved in thoughts of samsaric activities or old familiar places. You should feel that you have such control over your mind that you could place it on any meditation object. If your mind is bothered and agitated, you can't meditate. All right, so anyway. Salome Eshi said too that when you exhale, visualizing the energy dissolving within the central channel when you exhale is an essential aspect of the practice of Kundalini Yoga. Therefore, it is important to do this. Do not feel that you're losing the energy at that time. When you finish the 9 rounds of the Vase meditation, then you can go on to the actual yoga method. So we're gonna do this to help our minds settle down at the retreat. We'll do this particular 9-round breathing vase meditation that Lama Yeshe is describing. Now, sometimes, you know, they talk about, you know, like we breathe in, so many different explanations, but, you know, this, we breathe in the left and out the right to exhale energy of attachment, in the right and out the left to exhale energy of anger and hatred, and then sometimes it's like, when you breathe in and you do the vase meditation, sometimes, you know, it's like when you exhale, sometimes they say you're exhaling ignorance. So we have greed, hatred, and ignorance. But, you know, we've got enough to do. So let's do that. Real simple. And when you finish 9 rounds, just let your mind rest in whatever your experience is. You know, just let your mind rest in that spaciousness, and you know, if there's a pleasant sensation, that a residual pleasant sensation, you can just enjoy that for a minute. So this is what we're going to do, you know, at the beginning of each session, and then we'll do we'll read the foundation of all good qualities. So we might as well do that. I think we'll just my plan tonight was to feel our way through the sadhana one time. Everybody have a chance to do it together and see if there are any questions. But let's do it like we're going to do it. And does anybody know where the foundation of all good qualities is? It's got to be in here somewhere.
93,
okay.
93.
Now, those of you who've had, we're going to focus on the three principal aspects of the path, and they're all kind of subsumed in this text, although it's not easy to see them. The whole path is summarized in this text, but it's, again, not always so easy to see the points of the path. But we're going to say this, and then probably, you know, for example, we'll start out, we might stop after the first stanza and meditate on the preciousness of the teacher, of our guru. And then we'll do that for maybe 5 minutes, and then we'll go down and stop at another point and maybe meditate some more on another point like bodhicitta, and then read the whole text. But the whole text summarizes the path. So we want to get an idea of the whole path every time we read this text. Some of you have memorized it, and that's great, but it's just it's a very profound text, and it's auspicious to read it, even if we don't understand every word of it. And I'm not going to try to, I can try to explain it now, but we don't really have time tonight to explain it. So you can go online on Lama Issue Wisdom Archive. There's a, Kunru Lama Rinpoche gave a really, really nice cryptic, commentary on this text if you want to check that out. Okay, you ready? So we'll do this together. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind and perfect pure guru. Directed devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, greatly meaningful and difficult to find again, please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly day and night takes its essence. This life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like the shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me to always be careful to abandon even the slightest negativities and accomplish all virtuous deeds. Seeking samsaric pleasures is the door to all suffering. They are uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing these shortcomings, please bless me to generate the strong wish for the bliss of liberation. Led by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great caution arise. The root of the teachings is keeping the pratimoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Just as I have fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all mother migratory beings. Please bless me to see this, train in supreme bodhicitta, and bear the responsibility of freeing migratory beings. Even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I don't practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the bodhisattva vows with great energy. Once I have pacified distractions to wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream the unified path of calm abiding and special insight. Having become a pure vessel by training in the general path, please bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the supreme Vajra vehicle. At that time, the basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows and samaya. As I have become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Then, having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of the Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, please bless me to realize the teachings of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the gurus who show the noble path and the spiritual friends who practice it have long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. In all my lives, never separated from perfect gurus, may I enjoy the magnificent Dharma. By completing the qualities of the stages and paths, may I quickly attain the state of Vajradhara. Okay, so did Donna give out, did we have the text? I didn't get a, pardon? Oh, they are, okay. Does someone mind bringing me one, please? Thank you. All right. Thank you. I'm not sure. I think I bought this book in 2003, and then as they seem to do a lot, they came out with it again, the revised edition. They just moved things around and came a new... same book. It's not exactly the same, but it's almost exactly the same. But anyway, this book is not, we don't have it yet, do we? I think Donna C. had ordered them or was trying to order them. This will be good for the people that want to do the 100,000 mantras, do that commitment. I'll say a word or two about that. Excuse me. So it's a really a great practice, and it's a big deal in Tibetan Buddhism to purify. You know, Lama Tsongkhapa, after he had become quite, you know, an academic, he went into retreat for years and years doing prostrations and Vajrasattva practice and so on, to because he couldn't have the direct insight into emptiness until he cleaned up the, you know, the weeds in his garden, so to speak. So anyway, it's like that, you know, this is a big practice, a big deal practice. And so if you do it, and this weekend is a great start, and you don't have to do the 100,000, but this is an opportunity that Lama Zopa has suggested that people who started this, you know, in the retreat, for example, you might do, you know, 100,000. You know, you might get 2 or 3, maybe 4 or 5 thousand done. I doubt it. I'll be surprised if anybody gets that many done. But, you know, you might get several thousand done. Well, that's a good start. And if you wanted to do this whole commitment of 100,000, then you could do it as long as you keep the practice alive. And Lama Zopa says, now, there's, in this text, there are like three different sadhanas. And what I mean by sadhana? It means a method of accomplishment. So the one we're going to use is the shortest one. But there's an intermediate length one, and then there's a longer one. It'd be good for those of you who are doing the, thinking about doing this, or are going to do this 100,000 mantra commitment, to learn all of these. But the point is, you need to do the practice every day, the short sadhana every day, and Lama Zopa said at least 21 long mantras. Geshe Gelug said, he thought about it for a minute, he said, for our people, 7 would be enough. Let us off the hook. But, you know, to keep the energy going. So if you're really sick, for example, you still need to do it. You still need to be able to do the practice, even if you're sick, which you go, oh my gosh, that's being pretty rough. Well, guess what? That's when we really need to be able to practice the Dharma, isn't it? When we're dying. You know, if we're freaking out and our mind is out of control, and we're not making any effort to practice, that's terrible. So even if you're sick, and you say, well, what if I have to have an operation and I'm on a ventilator for 2 days or whatever, you still can try to do it, but if you can't do it, then you didn't do it, and you have to start again. That's just not being mean, but that's just the game. That's the rule. You keep the energy has to be unbroken, and if it's broken, then you start over again, which is okay, not a bad thing. Normally this retreat is done takes about 3 months to do it. If you do 4 sessions a day, you know, those sessions could be anywhere from an hour and a half to 2.5, 3 hours long in a retreat situation. You do one before breakfast, one at between breakfast between in the morning, like 9 or 11:30, something like that. Then you'd eat lunch, take a break, and do another one in the afternoon for a couple of hours, take another break, and then do another one that evening. That would be the typical way to do it in retreat. We don't have the luxury of doing a long retreat, so I was thinking, you know, I haven't really come up with the actual schedule, but I think what we'll do is shorter sessions, because I think that'll be better for our concentration than if we do, you know, first of all, I think we'd lose a lot of people if we said, okay, now we're going to sit here for 2.5 hours You know, it'd be tough. So we'll start, you know, maybe do two sessions, one before breakfast and then another session, two sessions in the morning, and then a lunch will be, you know, and we'll come up with exact times, and then we'll have a discussion after lunch, and then we'll do another session. And that session is going to probably be, we'll do the same visualizations, the same sadhana, but we'll do, as we're doing the mantras, we'll be doing prostrations to keep people awake. This is one of Lama Zopa's recommendations, is to do the first session after lunch. And I don't know if we have time, if we'll have time to do two sessions or not. We'll see. But we'll have a tea break. I'm sorry?
Have a light lunch.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. I think that's going to be the main meal. And then we'll have dinner, and then we'll have another session. And my request is that we keep the retreat absolutely 1,000% silent, and unless it's an emergency. And I want to say this too: this is not going to be that hard. Lama Yeshe said last time, he said, "Oh, going to retreat. Oh, that should be." He said, "That was the happiest time of my life when I was in retreat." He said, "It should be like going to a nightclub." But, you know, I don't think it's going to be like going to a nightclub. We're going to have to push a little bit because it takes effort. It'll be effortful, but it'll be worthwhile. And we'll get a chance, you know, when I did this back in 82, actually, this guy named Tom, that was a good friend of mine who'd done it three times, three-month retreats. He said, "Look, if anybody asks you what you're doing, just tell them you're going to do a retreat. You're going to look into the nature of your mind." And I thought, you know, why are we being so mystical about it? But I think it's important to not talk about it, you know, like, you know, because it's real easy for our ego to get in there and start creating obstacles for us and telling other people that you're gonna go do Vajrasattva. Just say, you know, I'm spending the weekend investigating my mind. Just make it as vague as you. But then at the end of the retreat, a lot of times that's really, I mean, that actually was what happened. I got to see really much more intimately than ever before how at least my mind works. And so I think that is the truth. But like I said last time, you don't want to make a big deal out of this to your family or friends or anybody. You want to keep it kind of on the, just don't make a big deal out of it. It just has the potential to create obstacles. So I think getting back to the 100,000 thing, There's a practice called the Nundro, and it's usually in the Galupa tradition. I think there's either 9 or 12 different things that we do, but in the other three traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, the Nundro is four things, and these are practices. Even the Vajrasattva, you go, "Oh my gosh, that's a tantric practice," but this is when you can, this is the one time you can use a tantric deity in the sutra to prepare yourself for tantra. But doing the Nundra is said to be the quintessential way to prepare your mind to be successful in tantric practice. So the Nundra would be 100,000 prostrations. And again, this would be a meditative experience. It wouldn't be just exercise. But you'd be doing it with a visualization and maybe even a mantra. Sometimes you can, you know, And then 100,000 mandala offerings, 100,000 refuge formulas, and 100,000 Vajrasattva. And of all the things that Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa have pushed, you know, or I should say encouraged their students to do after they had taken refuge and had a pretty solid understanding and appreciation of karma and the three principles, was to say, okay, you know, this would be a great next step to do Vajrasattva. So if you want to do it, then bring your counter so you can keep up with the mantras that you're going to do and see if you can keep the continuity of it. and it might take, and we could actually have some, I'm happy to come and be part of, you know, a Saturday, you know, when I'm free. I'm happy to come and lead the discussion. And we can also use a more elaborate sadhana. There are other sadhanas that include the intermediate length sadhanas, very easy to do, be different. And then the longer sadhanas, not hard to do either. It involves prayers and, I mean, different, an inner offering and things like that that we could explain later. And there's a lot of ringing of the bells and the dhammarus and making sound offerings too for the longer sadhana. But anyway, how many people, I saw some hands go up last time, how many people are like going to do it, going to do 100,000 and are committing to do that many? Okay, good. And in an unbroken lineage or unbroken energy. So that's great. And you know what? This is, Geshe Gelug will be so thrilled. It's like the best offering we could make to him is to show him that, you know, we're serious about our practice. So, you know, I think this is something, and this is something you shouldn't be shy about. When you do something that is, you know, that where you put the teachings into practice, this is the one of the things you do is you tell your teacher, oh, I finished 100,000 Bhadrasattva mantras. And then he gets to rejoice. You know, that's one of the most profound practices of a bodhisattva is rejoicing, particularly in the practice of his students' practices and their successes. So don't feel shy about telling Geshe-la what you're doing and when you finish doing it. That'd be great. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
If we want to do the entire 100,000, do we have to use the same seat or what
was
that?
That's the point. No, you do not. Because we're going to leave, right? You don't have to use the same meditation cushion. That's just the point, too. You can. Some people travel for work. You know, they can't stay in the same place. If you could go home and always use the same cushion for... Because this is going to take more than 3 months. It's going to take maybe 9 months, a year to complete it. So you may not always have, you know, ideal situation.
And when you do the mantras, you do the beginning of the sadhana, then the mantras, and then the end of the sadhana. So
the sadhana that we're using is the one that you can use now. We can go over at a later date. We're not going to do it on this retreat. But some of the visualizations that we'll do will be coming out of the sadhana,
right,
out of the more elaborate sadhana, because it's just easier to visualize. For example, Vajrasattva. Mm-hmm. Now, there's another. Any more?
I did. Is this in the red booklet? Is that the sadhana?
This is
the
sadhana we'll use. Yes.
Because the short sadhana in the other book here has like the visualization of your parents and first, and then the emptiness thing. So it's okay to use just this.
Yeah,
I don't want to start wrong.
Which one are you? Are you talking about in that little book there?
The one
in your lap?
Yeah. The short one here has a little more, and I can.
Yeah, that's the one where we're gonna try. I'm gonna try to include those aspects into the description.
It's just important to me to start correctly.
Well,
I don't have to start.
It's important for me that you start.
I know.
Now we're gonna do yeah. Sure.
I don't understand. You said three things. One, visualization. And in the middle, you said to do one mantra. I don't know. I didn't understand. Third, you said 100,000 bodhisattva. What you said in the three things? I don't know.
I'm not clear what your question is.
Okay, I have another question. Every day, at least 21 times,
yeah,
I will do that. So it will take few months to do 1,000, right?
Not really. 1,000? 100,000 is going to take...
100,000.
Yeah.
It will take few months.
It will take many months. If you did this practice 8 hours a day, 8 to 10 hours a day, it would take 3 months. So we're talking, this could take...
I don't understand, 21 times a day or...
That's the minimum. That's the minimum. To keep the energy.
You can do more.
You can do way more. Like, you know, 21 times is just the minimum you need to do to keep the energy going. If you want to do it all day long and do, you know, 5,000 or 3,000 a day, that's perfectly okay to do more. That's what I said. We can have Saturdays where we just do Vajrasattva, you know, for half a day for like 3 hours and come in and knock out 1,000 or something like that, you know?
But my mind should be there. I'm doing Vajrasattva Samaya, but mind is somewhere else. That don't work, right?
That's right.
I have to be very serious.
You have to be very serious. In fact, the strictest, Lama has given us a break on this, but in the first time he ever taught us, he said, if your mind wanders, let me tell you, if you, you know, even wanders from the visualization, you have to start the mala over. Well, I mean, if you've gotten through about 75 mantras, which have taken you 20 minutes to get there, and your knees are screaming at you, and your mind is off, you know, at Disney World, you know, it doesn't feel good to have to start all over. So we don't do that anymore. But you just, when your mind wanders from the visualization, you bring it back. You know, you just
putting
bring it back
my mind on the...
Yeah, you bring your back mind to the visualization.
Like meditation.
This is, yeah, that's the meditation. That's the most important part of the practice, is to keep the visualization going and the understanding of what you're doing, that you're purifying, and what you're purifying, because, and I'll go over this in a minute.
And one more thing, I'm very new in Buddhism, that's why I'm asking. If I read the whole thing very nicely, and I do it with my all love and sincerity,
mm-hmm.
Do you think I'll be benefited by this retreat?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how about that book? I don't have that book.
Well, you won't need that book for this retreat.
I don't need?
Not for this retreat.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Now, let me say this. A lot of the, you know, it's not like, you know, Sunday afternoon when we finish the retreat, that somehow, you know, we're going to feel, I mean, everybody's going to have a different experience. So, yeah, things will happen. And I can say, because I have strong faith in karma, I can say that if we do the practice sincerely and with good concentration and do your best, it's, you know, absolutely guaranteed good things will happen. Whether they happen Monday or next week or whether they happen, you know, next year, next month, or next lifetime, I don't know. It really depends, doesn't it? But, well, you know, it's a very beneficial first step to purifying your mind. Now, we use the example in Sunday's teachings a little bit, but Rabina uses this example a lot, and I like it, about how our mind is like a garden, and most of the time, our actions of body, speech, and mind are motivated by self-interest, selfishness, what we call self-cherishing. Most of the time, every now and then, no, it's not that way. And even when we do good things, sometimes it's mixed, you know, with self-cherishing. So our garden is full of weeds, and we do have positive seeds. We do have positive seeds, but until we do the work of purifying the garden and taking the weeds out, the karmic seeds that have been planted, the ones of virtue that are going to bring us happiness and bliss and joy and all the things that we want, they can't come up and they can't flourish. So we need to get in the garden and do the work. So this is very much about understanding seeds. And when the mind is distracted, you know, one of the things I did during my retreat, and I'm just telling you what I did, and maybe I'll do it again, but every time I got distracted, I would note that I used to call it truth for an ignorant consciousness. Because that's what it is. It's conventional truth. The mind's wandering off, usually to something of attachment. And Jeffrey Hopkins, he said, oh, you know, that's just the conventional mind, you know, just going off. And he said, is truth for an ignorant consciousness or a jerk truth? That's what he used, like a jerk. Like your mind is, like it's and it's not helpful. So I got in the habit of labeling, really trying to pay attention to when my mind was gone and noting that was, you know, a distraction and getting the mind back. And you get better at that with practice. You get a lot better with that at practice. Right now, most of us are terrible at it. But with practice, and Vajrasattva is really designed, when you think about it, it's really going to be challenging. How many people have memorized a 100-syllable mantra? Now, how fast can you say it? Pardon? 18 or 20 seconds? 16 seconds. All right. 13. All right. Let me hear 13 seconds. Let me hear what it sounds like. Now, here's the thing. Here's the point. I don't want us to get into a race on the weekend. This is not a competitive event. I know we're all competitive people, but you know, Susie might get 2,000 done, and you may only get 200 done, and that's kudos for Susie. But the point is to be able to do it mindfully and keep the visualization going. So there's a lot of stuff to go. If you've memorized it, and then it's going to be a lot easier. If you're one of these, you know how we sing it along, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manavlaya. That is not going to work. Not only that, you'll be forever doing it, and it's very hard to concentrate when you're doing it in a sing-songy way. So, if you know people who've done a lot of these retreats, if you can get a rhythm going where you can say it quickly, then you're much more able to keep your mind focused. So, you know, I'm not going to do that mantra, because the one I did was Om Vajraharuka Samaya. But it's okay to do either one. Vajrasattva samaya manaplaya vajrasattva tino pati dhridhama bhavasatashma bhavasapashma bhavanatama bhavasavasitime paja. So you want to be able to say it. When you say it, you want to enunciate every syllable, but the person sitting right next to you cannot hear you. That's how it needs to be done. And so you will try to say it under your breath, so to speak. And, this guy, Tom Szymanski, said, before I did the retreat, he said, I can do it in 7 seconds. You know.
Do it in 7 seconds or 1 minute.
It only matters in terms of how long it takes to finish the 100,000 if you're going to do that. And I do think that if you say it with some rapidity, it's easier to keep the meditation going than if you're reading it or kind of stumbling along. It's very good to memorize it. Pardon?
Why is the significance of
100,000? 100,000, it's actually 110, because you do 10 extra thousand for the mistakes you made on the 100,000. But that's a magic number. Well, it does. In terms of the commitment that the teachers ask us to do, I guess they came up with the number 100,000 would mean a pretty sincere commitment if you could do that. I don't have any other answer than that. It's just the number that is used has been chosen. Okay.
When I will do Vajrasattva Samaya, should I visualize this thing?
All right, I'm going to go over that.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. Now if you open the sadhana, you'll see that there's two Vajrasattva practices. There's one that's more, you know, you see in other traditions. You don't see it in the Galupa Galupa tradition too. It's Vajrasattva as just one person. It's usually a male figure. And Vajrasattva is holding a bell in his left hand. You see that? It's sitting like this, like that, right by his side. And then he's holding a vajra like this. Well, in this particular image, he has a consort. Okay? And so, obviously, there's a message there, isn't it? That's different than just a solitary Vajrasattva. And Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa encouraged, and I've read it numerous times, it really encouraged people, their students, to do Vajrasattva with consort. So that's why I'm doing it that way, because it's much more powerful. And of course, there's a lot of sexual imagery, right? And we all, that's a big deal to the human beings, is that. And so that's something that is not the point, though. The point is that that's your mind. Vajrasattva and consort are your mind, and your mind is creating these visualizations to help you purify your mind. And they symbolize different things. Usually the male symbolizes the father, or they call it father and mother. The father figure symbolizes method or compassion. And in Tantra, and High Sugar Tantra symbolizes bliss, and the female symbolizes wisdom. So it's the union of method and wisdom. That's the point of the what they call yab-yum, or the father and mother, the deities that are in sexual union, is the union of bliss and emptiness. And you know, color chakra, same thing, the union of bliss and emptiness, male and female in union. So what we're going to do is we're going to create this. I'm going to lead you through a visualization. I need to go ahead and talk about this now. We're going to do this in just a moment. We're going to do the prayers, do the visualization a little different way at the retreat, but not much than what we're doing tonight. We'll do the visualization, and then there'll be you'll do the mantra recitation. And what I want you to, what I'm going to have you do, let me see. It's not going to be written down here, but I'm going to add on to it. So you just have to follow me. It's real simple. But what we'll do is we'll read through the sadhana, and we get to the point where it's time to manifest Vajrasattva over our head, right? I'm going to say visualize the syllable PAM, P-A-M, and then you're going to, and so there's a Sanskrit syllable PAM, but you don't have to remember that. You can just memorize just that syllable. Okay, I'll spell it for you. And then that, you imagine that above the crown of your head, and it can be way up there, but not too far away, or it can just be above the crown of your head, that becomes a thousand petal lotus. And above that, you'll visualize that, and then above that is an ah, like an A-H, and you'll imagine that becomes a moon disc. Okay? And then above that, you'll see a hum, H-U-M, but there's a Sanskrit syllable. If you've memorized these, that's fine. But there's a hum, and you visualize that the hum transforms into a five-pronged vajra, which is a little vajra that usually the nuns use these little vajras, but a lot of the anyway, it's smaller than the one that you use at retreat usually. But this is a five-pronged vajra, and the hum is right at the center of it. So imagine that. So you've got a thousand petal lotus, a moon disc, and now the hum transforms into a five-pronged vajra marked by hum at its center. Okay? Now, is this all solid? Uh-uh. This is completely made of light, like a hologram. You're creating it with your own mind. Okay? Every bit of it is a manifestation of your mind. And some people are better at visualization than others. By the way, let me back up a second and say, if you completely fail on this visualization, you can just visualize an orb of white light, and that would be a good start too. Don't worry about the detail, but this is how it's done. And then we'll describe lights go out from the home in the vajra, and they accomplish the two purposes, which is purifying all sentient beings and presenting delightful offerings to the Buddhas and the sons. and then it comes back. And so you imagine that this Vajra is like a billion times more powerful than the sun, and sending out, you know, doing these two things, and then light and energy comes back, and this thing all of a sudden becomes like atomic bomb type energy, and it poof transforms into Vajrasattva with consort. And so they're sitting, you know, above you. Usually they're facing like the, in this way, the male is facing outward and the female is facing this way. And Lama Yeshe said, well, if you're a woman, you have trouble visualizing yourself as a man, then you can just do that. And if you're a man, you have trouble visualizing. But the point is, you know, just do the best you can. And, you know, the point is, not many of us, and maybe none of us, are going to be able to do this visualization with any precision. But it's good to have the imprints of how to do it. And then at their heart will be at the heart of Vajrasattva and his consort is a moon disk with HUM sitting in the center, and around this moon disk on the edges of it is the 100-syllable mantra. And as you're saying the mantra, when we get to that point, one more time. Once you get the moon, the hum, and the mantra, then once more lights go out and lights come back in and really kind of activate the mantra. And that's, you know, fully powerful and it's activated. And now, as you say the mantra, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapolaya Vajrasattva Dinapati Dhridhama Bhavastarima 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 Bhavastarima. As you're saying it, light and nectar are coming down like a fire hose, right? Usually, Lama Yeshe is described two different ways in the book. I don't want to confuse people. The easiest way to remember it is that light and nectar coming from both Vajrasattva and his consort, and she has a Tibetan name which I cannot remember right now, Dorji something or other. But anyway, light and nectar coming down from the hum and the syllables of the mantra, like really coming down powerfully through the central channel to where their sexual organs are joined, and then it comes down through the moon disk, through the lotus, into the crown of your head. Okay? Now this is not, we're not talking about sexual fluids here or anything. This is psychic energy. So we're using this powerful psychic energy that's coming, you know, down through the crown of our head, you know, to purify. Now there are four visualizations that we're going to do as we say the mantra. And we can say the mantra, maybe tonight we'll do it 5 minutes with each visualization. The first one, and there's a fancy name, there's a Tibetan word for it, I can't remember, but I don't need to know it. But the first visualization, the light and nectar come through the crown of your head, and it really is, you know, Lama says it's like, let me see if I can read it, because his words are interesting. But it's like pushing out all the negative energy of physical negative karma. Okay, you're purifying your physical negative karma, so it's really pushing down, pushing it all out the lower doors of your body. Okay, so your anus and down that way, and disappearing in the space below you. And you know there's certain elaborate visualizations, but the main thing is it's leaving your body through the lower doors and disappearing forever. So you're purifying your physical negative karma as you do this recitation. Alright, so here's what Lama Yeshe says. White radiant light of Supreme Wisdom energy is invoked from Haruka Vajrasattva's heart, goes down his Sushumna into a secret chakra, into Dorji. See, this is a different visualization, slightly. Dorji Nima is the consort's name. And their bodies are filled with blissful, white, radiant light. From the mantra at the heart of each deity, blissful, white, kundalini energy rushes down the central channels through their secret chakras into your crown chakra. It is very powerful, like a waterfall. And then he calls, the first visualization is Yang Day. White light rushes down your Shishuma, pushing out through your secret chakra all your negative energy and impurities in the aspect of pigs, chickens, snakes, and so forth. These are some of the visualizations that are recommended. Just anything that you find, it could be scorpions. Oh, he said, like other animals, like scorpions, monkeys, cows, symbolize all the different sorts of negativity within your nervous system. All are completely flushed out. Your dissatisfaction and loneliness are also purified, as are any other disturbing negative symptoms that you can think of. But mainly it's purifying physical negative karma. Now, we keep saying the mantra. The next visualization is purifying verbal negative karma. So he says, here you visualize all your internal garbage floating on the surface of the blissful kundalini energy as it fills your body to the top. The garbage leaves your body through your eyes, nose, mouth, and ears, and also bubbles out your crown chakra. So what's happening here is just like if you poured water into this glass and it had a bunch of crud in the bottom of it that would float. If you keep pouring water in it, finally the crud would overflow. So it's like that. The verbal negative karma that we've created, when we do it now, we're thinking, okay, I'm purifying my verbal negative karma, harsh speech, slander, lying, and all the rest. I'm purifying that, and you say the mantra, and you visualize that's all that negativity is coming out your ears and your nose and your eyeballs and even the crown chakra, and it disappears completely. And the third visualization is brilliant, radiant light. It beams down from Vajrasattva's heart. Now we're sort of talking about light and nectar, but now this is more like light through his secret chakra, and then through your crown and purifies your entire nervous system. So this one is described as like turning on a light in a dark room. You know, it's like as soon as that light enters the crown of your head, it like completely eliminates the darkness of ignorance. Okay, so this is purifying the negative karma of mind. Right? So you imagine your body is completely luminous as you say this, completely luminous as the light enters the crown of your head. At the end, Vajrasattva, right, and so then there's one more visualization that is recommended. It's not in every text, but it's in a lot of texts, and some of you are familiar with it, where you visualize all three things at one time. And this is said to purify the subtle negativities, the subtle obscurations that prevent us from becoming enlightened. The subtle obscurations. So, and this time you visualize the light is doing, this would make you crazy if you think about it. But you're trying to do them all three at one time, and you can't do it perfectly, and so you get to give yourself a break. This is a part of the practice, this is realizing that this is really, you know, to do this well, it would be pretty amazing. But you visualize the light coming in, it's flushing all the negativity of the physical negativities out the lower part of the body, the verbal negativities are coming this way, the body's lit up, you know, all this is happening at the same time. Purifying subtle obscurations, what's called the obscurations to omniscience, to becoming a fully enlightened Buddha. So those are the four visualizations that we're going to do. And we'll, yes. Wait a minute, you want to get the microphone? Do you need that?
Yeah, are the first two that you're talking about, do they correlate with, you know, in the little cheat sheet, I guess, in retrospect, kind of a cheat sheet that we have here at the center for doing the small Vajrasattva practice?
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know, when he talks about it, the energy kind of going up and going down and then going up, Are those the first two that you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, because
it's the same one.
Yeah, he put it's kind of in parentheses in that, you know, the one going up, the one going down. It doesn't really explain it very much.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
So if that's the first two.
Yeah.
And the first one's down, the second one's up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, I'll go over this during the retreat multiple times, so it'll be clear, I hope.
Don, we have this written down. When Venerable Verbena comes, she prints out a booklet.
Yeah.
And each booklet that she's printed so far has had this visualization and purification in it.
Right.
So if you have that, and it's probably
online. Does it have the fourth one in it,
yes,
too? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Then, so what happens now when we finish this? Now, supposedly, in one of these texts, I didn't do this when I was doing it, but when we do the last, and I'll be the one that, you know, I guess I'll be the one that decides when we're doing the last one, but when we do the last, you know, recitation for that round, we'll ring the bell. And, you know, we'll all ring the bell together and we'll go, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Tino Patita Gurida Mavava. We'll do it slower and we'll all do it together and ring the bell. And the bell is the sound of wisdom. And we have to remember emptiness around this time. We'll talk about that in a moment. So in the text that Lama gave us, Lama Zopa gave us, there's actually some space to do some, let's see, there's an absorption and a dedication. I thought there was an emptiness meditation in here. But, pardon? Oh, okay, good, yeah, okay, I see. All right, well, we'll work on that too. So then, so when we finish that, there's a little, you know, we say a couple of things. Okay, there's, we finish the mantra recitation, and then there's, whoops. When you finish the mantra recitation, there's this is really important, actually. You really want to feel like you've been purified. So feel like you've let go of something, of negativity of your body, speech, and mind. You want to have faith. This is where you have to have faith in karma, have really strong faith that something has shifted in your psyche. You know, something has, seeds have been planted and weeds have been pulled up and, you know, the causes of happiness have been created. Now, I haven't said much about the guru here, but I will, because most people here don't have anybody that they see as their guru necessarily. I might have mentioned it last time, but it, you know, this was in Lama Yeshe's text, it's emphasized to see your mind and Vajrasattva's mind and your guru's mind as of the same nature, which is empty. And actually see your guru as inseparable from Vajrasattva. So for me, Lama Yeshe was the person who gave me this initiation, and so I felt like that's Lama Yeshe. You know, he's inseparable. You know, and I'm creating all of this with my mind, and I know that. I know what I'm doing. I'm not crazy. I'm not hallucinating. I'm using my mind to create a visualization to purify my mind. And which brings up another point, and that is that, I don't know everybody here. I know that this practice, if you were to do it in an intense way, some people can't do it. You know, they just can't, they find obstacles just come in like crazy and they have problems. And some people, it might actually be not, if somebody's not mentally really pretty much what you consider to be healthy, I would say that, mentally healthy, this is probably not a good practice to do, because it will bring stuff up. Memories,
you know, you may find memories, you may dredge up memories that you didn't even, of things that happened that you had suppressed. Could happen. Happened to me. All kinds of stuff will come up, and you really get to work with it. And here's what I always tell people. This is maybe my couple of things that I got from the retreat. But I, every time I sit down to do this practice, I would think, what am I going to have to deal with this time? I had no idea. It was like, you know, because I knew that my commitment was to sit there for X number of, you know, for this period of time, do the practice, do the mantra, and just not give up. Just stay with it and not give up. And how much control do we have over our mind? Almost none. So that's what I said. It was like, I just felt like all kinds of imprints, karmic imprints from my past, some of them were blissful. Some of them were like, honestly, really bad, you know, like yucky, uncomfortable. Sometimes it would manifest as just pain in the body, you know. And it's the ideal way to do this is to sit perfectly still the entire time. Now that right there is enough to make most people nearly go crazy. It's very uncomfortable. If you've ever done a Zen retreat where you have to sit for 50 minutes and don't move, and then you get up and walk for 10 minutes and go sit down for another 50 minutes and then walk for 10 minutes, and if you move, somebody hits you with a stick. but sitting perfectly still is it helps the mind stay steady. So to the best of your ability, you want to sit as still as possible. And not be fidgeting and stuff. Don't be a distraction. And I'm asking people to like 100%, if possible. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make anybody push anybody over the edge here. But I'd like for people who do the retreat and to be ready to do the retreat. And so to be there 100% means that you're there at every session. And that you do the retreat in its entirety. You don't, you know, you don't get up and walk out of the session. If you had to go to the bathroom, I guess you could, but try to do that before you come in. And just really stick together. Because there's a, you know, we'll create some energy, won't we? As a group. And we all know what that's like when somebody leaves. If you've got a group of people and then maybe two or three people leave, then it shakes the energy up until we can, you know, get it back together. So my request is that people really make a strong intention to be 100% present, do it well, do the best you can. Don't push, though. Don't squeeze, because it's going to be so easy to want to do that, because we, particularly Westerners, have a tendency to, the Tibetans call it lung, L-U-N-G, which means wind disease. And you'll know it because it'll feel like an elephant is sitting on your chest. And hopefully it's not a heart attack. But you'll feel tight right here. And, you know, if you're having questions about that, come see Dr. Watkins. He's an expert in, But don't, you know, but you might get some discomfort in the pit of your stomach and stuff if you start squeezing. So it's very good on the breaks to go outside and try to, you know, look at the sky and so forth, and don't just sit around in your room and like that. And so you want to use the break time also to keep, you can continue to do the mantra if you want to. It's very helpful to see every thought as coming from the space of emptiness, and any experience, any kind of sensory experience or thought is coming from emptiness. It manifests, stays a short time or stays a long time, and then disappears back into emptiness. So to have that feeling of everything's coming from emptiness and disappearing back into the space of emptiness, try to keep some sort of mindfulness going on throughout the whole time of the retreat. Don't let your mind, you know, and for gosh sakes, leave your cell phones in your car if you can. I mean, none of us really, you know, needed cell phones until we got them. And then we thought, oh my God, I can't live without it. But there's a phone number at the retreat center. Maybe you can, if you have, you know, family and stuff like that, you can call the family and tell them if there's an emergency call. But otherwise, can you just leave me alone for the next day and a half and let me have this experience be useful? Any questions so far? Yeah.
I have a question which maybe, say we, this is basically we are changing the state of mind by this Bodhisattva retreat or this visualization and all this mantra.
Right.
Now, after that, my question is that how permanent is this change of state of the mind?
How permanent is it?
How permanent it is.
Ah, that's a good question. What do you think?
What I think that you have to maybe maintain this procedure or whatever you call it, time to time, so that mind does not come back, the other state of mind which was there. Now you have elevated or whatever you call it, cleaned it, and in a stage by this forceful
visualization, right.
But then maybe when you go in a mundane worldly life, whether it will remain or what one has to do to keep it that
clean, yeah. Well, it's a great question. It's a great question, and it's not permanent. You're right. It's we can gunk up our mind in no time. And that's why this is all the teachers recommend doing this practice before you go to bed at night, because at least you can try to neutralize some of the negative karma of the day. So it's good to bring to mind, like what you did during the day that was not skillful, you know, whether it was something like just being mean to somebody or just going brain dead for, you know, half the day and not even thinking about anything or anybody else. But whatever was not skillful, bring it to mind. You know, use your four opponent powers, right? The power of reliance, regret, promise not to do it again, and then to do the remedy. So this, you know, bring these four opponent powers to mind, and then do the practice. You can do it sitting in bed. You don't have to do a formal sadhana to do that. And then rejoice. This is just as important, by the way. Rejoice in the things that you did that day that were positive. And somehow, the teachers say that this kind of begins to work on our mind even when we're sleeping. The prana, the subtle energies of the mind, because we're rejoicing, that tends to increase, you know, anything we rejoice in, we tend to want to do more of, right? So things that we've done well, or things that we're genuinely happy about, we rejoice in. And so, yeah, you got to do the practice. Ideally, we do it the rest of our life. And maybe with more intensity at some times than others. Yeah. So let's go ahead and do this, otherwise we're never going to get through. Yeah.
Are only the mantras that you do during the sadhanas, those are the ones that count toward your 100,000?
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can't do them as you walk. Well, yeah, exactly. If we're doing them while we're prostrating, and I would say it's a little bit hard to count. You know, we can, you can do, I think we'll just let everybody do their own, you know, but we can, you know, we could go one mantra per prostration, but here we're trying to, well, I haven't decided how to do that yet, but we could do one mantra per prostration, or we could let everybody just do it at their own rate and keep up with the number of mantras that they're doing.
How long will the sessions be? Because you're saying you want us to stay in the room, and I'm very fidgety, and I want to stay in the room.
I'm thinking 45 minutes to an hour. Yeah. I mean, you can stand up and move if you need to.
I'll
and you can sit in a chair. There'll be chairs and there'll be cushions. There'll be both. Yeah. you get tired of sitting on the cushion, you can get up on a chair. Yeah. This should be like going to a nightclub. Pardon?
Say, 45 minutes or 1 hour session.
Yeah.
And then there will be some intermission.
There will be an intermission. I think it's a good way to put it.
Go on
and then we'll come back in 15 minutes, probably do another session. And yeah. So, what time is it now? Say it again. Holy moly. Well, we just, do we want to do this or just want to wait and want to do it? Okay. Let's do it. But we won't do many mantras. We'll just focus on the practice here. All right. Let me get my... People might want to know what the mantra means. There's lots of explanations. It's almost irrelevant. Just remember it means to purify. That's you know, there's a very literal meaning to it, but it's not really that helpful to by the way, if people want to be part of the what's called the preparation for the retreat, and I haven't done it for this practice. There's several things that we have to do. Some of these things might freak you out, but I'll tell you anyway. Okay, this is good. So what we're going to do when we get there, there's certain practices, certain things that we're going to do, offerings and prayers that are called preliminary practices to make offerings to the local spirit. So some of this sounds a little, we don't talk this way, do we, normally? But this is traditionally the way it's done, so I'm not going to try to, you know, reinvent the wheel here. So we're going to do that. And we'll try to do that in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, something like that. So if you come early and you want to try to be part of that, then what we're going to do is we have, I'm just telling you some more stuff we're going to do. We have, everybody's going to, if you have your own cushion, bring it. We're going to put, on the floor where your cushion is, and this is a right turning swastika. The left turning swastika was the one used by who? Yeah, the Nazis. The right-turning swastika actually symbolizes kind of like immovability, like, this is where we're gonna be for the retreat. It's like very powerful. So you typically, you'll put a swastika on a piece of paper or something like that, and you'll put it down, and then you'll have a piece of kusha grass, two pieces of kusha grass, and Donna's already gone out and gotten kusha grass at one of the Indian, the little broom, you know, the brooms that they use in the Indian stores. But we got kusha grass, so we'll have two. And this has to do with these two little pieces of kusha grass will be put over the swastika, and it symbolizes like powerful concentration. Okay, and then on top of that, we looked around while we were there on Sunday, and there's plenty of crabgrass. So you need multi-jointed grass, which crabgrass is. So you'll have a couple of sprigs of crabgrass you'll put on there, and that symbolizes your long life. So you'll do that, and you put your cushion over that, and that will be your seat for the retreat. Kind of make it something special, you might say, something powerful, simply because you understand what it means, that your commitment, the swastika, and concentration, and then, of course, living long. And it's important to live long. Why? So you can get enlightened to help all sentient beings, right? So that's the point. All right, so let's go ahead and do the do this. We'll do the prayer. And this is exactly the text that's in that little book that you were talking about. So it's nothing new to a lot of people. All right. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in all the three vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, in the bodhisattvas of the ten bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, take refuge in all the three vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, the bodhisattvas of the ten bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, take refuge in all the three vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, and the gods and goddesses, the bodhisattvas of the ten bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my guru forever. Now this is the power of regret. Alright, so this is Lama Zopa's commentary here. First of all, recall the definition of negative karma. Any action that results in suffering, usually an action motivated by ignorance, attachment, or aversion. Now, I guess we can do this together. So almost every action I do 24 hours a day is motivated by worldly concern, attachment to the comfort of this life. It is like this from birth to death, and this life has been like that from beginningless rebirths. Never every action I've ever created has been non-virtuous, the cause of suffering. Not only that, but continuously I've been breaking my pratimoksha, bodhisattva, and tantric vows. Worst of all, I've created the heaviest of negative karmas in relation to my virtuous friends, getting angry at them, generating wrong views, having non-devotional thoughts towards them, harming their holy body, and disobeying their advice. Having these negative imprints on my mental continuum is unbearable. It's as if I've swallowed a lethal poison. I must practice the antidote right away and pure all negative karma immediately without a second's delay. So this is probably the most important, it's said anyway, maybe the most important meditation of the retreat is when you bring to mind real things that you've done that you are not proud of, you know, that's particularly things that have a negative charge. When you think about them, you kind of flinch, it makes you twitch a little bit. They're not things that are happening now, right? But those imprints are still there. You know, we've done stuff that we're not proud of that has been harmful to us or to others. So we want to bring those things into awareness and sincerely regret them and bring more things into awareness. And hopefully we'll have a whiteboard there. I think we will, but maybe we should take this one. But it's good to write down the 10 non-virtuous actions and just to kind of help your memory. Like, when have I killed? Okay, I've never intentionally killed any human being, but animals and insects and things like that. And in former lifetimes, I've made Adolf Hitler look like a lightweight, this is how we need to think, that we've done it all. In the past lifetimes that we cannot remember, and it wasn't even me that did it, it was the continuity of my consciousness when I was in a different form. Maybe I was an alligator. Maybe I was a crocodile. Maybe I was a this or that, a human being. Many different forms I could have taken where I could have done all kinds of bad stuff. So just be open. This is about letting go of everything. Like eons of negative karma, not just the stuff from this lifetime, but eons of negative karma is what we want to get rid of. So killing and stealing and adultery. You don't want to think about those things. And then the ones of speech, lying and slander and harsh and frivolous speech. You want to think about those, each one, and see if you can remember sometime when did I lie? Because we lie in subtle ways, don't we? When did I badmouth somebody? And I really regretted doing that. So on. And then, aversion and hatred and ignorance and attachment and so forth. So we want to remember the 10 non-virtuous actions to trigger memories of things that we know we've done and then things that we don't remember having done, but we have some sense that we probably did them. Well, yeah, I think it's important to try to have some faith in karma and past lifetimes here, and maybe you don't, but if you can creatively align with the notion that, yeah, I've done it all in the past life, but this, you know, I've killed, stolen, did everything, you know, I'm not, you know, and I want to clean all that garbage up, because that's going to help my future look better. That's going to weed the garden big time. So this is really important meditation to do. Now let's do the on death and impermanence. Many people my age or younger have died. It's a miracle that I'm still alive and have this incredible opportunity to purify my negative karma. Death is certain, but the time of death is uncertain. If I were to die right now, I would definitely be born in the lower realms. Because I could not practice Dharma there, I would remain in the lower realms for countless eons. Therefore, how unbelievably fortunate I am to be able to purify my negative karma right now without even a second's delay by practicing the Vajrasattva's meditation recitation. Okay, now, this is the power of dependence, which has to do with basically generating bodhicitta and taking refuge and so forth. Let's read this. But I am not practicing the Vajrasattva purification for myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all hell beings, pretas, animals, humans, asuras, and intermediate state beings from all this suffering and its causes, and lead them to the unsurpassed enlightenment. In order to do this, I must first reach enlightenment myself. Therefore, I must purify all my negative karma immediately by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. So this reminds us that we're not doing this just for us, that this is a Mahayana practice. Now I could just leap into saying, above the crown of your head is a lotus and a moon seat and a Vajrasattva father and mother, and, you know, their faces are white. Two arms, Dorji Bell. She's holding a curved knife and a skull cup. So everything has meaning, right? The curved knife, the skull cup. Curved knife usually has to do with cutting through delusions. And in this case, I'm not sure what the skull cup means. I've been trying to look it up, but I've not had success. Alright, so I'll try to find that. So let's do this. I'm going to do the visualization from the intermediate states, the intermediate link sadhana that I think will help us get this together. So, and then I'll leap into this one here. But so above the crown of your head, visualize the syllable PAM, P-A-M, and it transforms into a lotus, 1,000-petal lotus, white lotus. Above that, in the center of that, is an A-H, that syllable, which becomes a moon cushion, upon which, from a home that's sitting above the moon cushion, so lotus, moon cushion, and then home, H-U-M, becomes a five-pronged vajra marked by hum at its center. From the hum, lights shine forth, and the two purposes are accomplished. So this light from the hum purifies all the negative karma of all sentient beings. And this is, I forgot to mention this, but we should imagine that on our left is our mom of this life, and the right is the father, with all of our male friends on the right and female friends and family on the left, and behind us are all of our friends as well, and in front of us are all of our enemies, so we have, they're right there in front of us, people that we have aversion toward, and we're surrounded by universal sentient beings, okay? So the light goes out from the hum and the mantra and purifies all the negative karma of all these sentient beings and presents delightful offerings to the Buddhas and their sons, okay? Who are the Bodhisattvas. So then this light, so from the two purposes accomplished, the light returns and transforms into white Vajrasattva with one face and two hands, his right hand holding a vajra and the left a bell in its lap. He's seated in the vajra position. His right arm embraces his consort, Dorji Nima Karmo, who has one face and two hands holding a curved knife and a skull cup. Both are adorned with silks and various precious ornaments. At the crown is an om. So at their crown is the syllable om. At each of their crown is a syllable om, which is usually the has to do with the body. And then ah, at their throat is the syllable ah, A-H. And at their heart is the syllable hum. From the home at the heart, lights shine forth, inviting divine wisdom beings who are similar to themselves. So this part I may leave out. Then, so you can imagine that similar beings from the farthest reaches of the universe are invited and come back and absorb into Vajrasattva. Once more light shine forth from the home and the heart, inviting the empowering deities, and again, I may leave that part out. Their bodies are filled with nectar. Right. On the moon disc at his heart stands a syllable hum circled by the 100-syllable mantra. Alright, so now right now at this point, I'm jumping around a little bit, but above the crown of my head, this is the visualization from the text we've been reading. Above the crown of my head, seated on a lotus and a moon seat, are Vajrasattva, father and mother. Their bodies are white. Each one has one face and two arms. He holds a dorji and bell, or vajra and bell. She a curved knife and skull cup. They're embracing each other. The father is adorned with 6 mudras and the mother with 5. And I cannot figure out what that means, but I've tried and I'll try again. But I'm not sure what that means. Mudras usually mean it has a certain, like mudras, sometimes we talk about hand, like this is a teaching mudra, right? It's a gesture that means teaching. And this is a meditation mudra. So I'm not sure what the 6 and 5 mean. He sits in the vajra posture, she in the lotus. And then this is, we're speaking to Vajrasattva. Let's do this together. Vajrasattva is my root guru, the holy mind of all the Buddhas, the Dharmakaya, who out of his unbearable compassion, which embraces me and all other sentient beings, appears in this form to purify me and all others. In this way, your mind is transformed into guru devotion, the root of all the blessings and realizations on the path. So now we'll read this part together. On the moon disc at Vajrasattva's heart stands a hum encircled by a garland of the 100-syllable mantra. A powerful stream of white nectar flows from the hum and mantra garland, and I am cleansed of all sickness, spirit harm, negative karma, and obscurations. So I've described the visualization earlier, right, of the light and nectar coming very powerfully from the hum, you know, going through the joined organs of Vajrasattva and consort, entering the crown of the head. This doesn't mention anything about that, but we know what we want to do because this, you know, they didn't go into any detail in this sadhana for obvious reasons because it could be misunderstood. Now we're going to do this together. Maybe we'll just do it, you know, in the little sing-songy way that we do. So since I don't know the tune, somebody help me here. I know it pretty well. But let's do this. Let's do the first, we'll do it together 5 times, and we'll visualize light and nectar from Vajrasattva and a consort coming in through the crown of her head and purifying our physical negative karma. So we'll do it 5 times that way together, okay? Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dino Patita Dido Me Bhava Sutukayo Me Bhava Supokayo Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sarva Siddhi Me Prayacha Sucha Me Tsidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gada Vabha Mami Mutsa Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Safa Aum Pe Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Dido Mebawa Sutokayo Mebawa Supokayo Mebawa Hanaratya Mebawa Sarasiri Meprayacha Kama Sutra Me Chitam Sriyam Guruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Dido Mebawa Sutokayo me bawa supokayo me bawa anarata me bawa sawa siri me payacha kama sutra me tsedam sriyam kuruham ha 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 ho bhagavan sawa tata gadra vadra mami mucha vadra bawa maha samaya sava ahum pe om bhadrasapa samaya manapalaya bhadrasapa dino patita tiryo me bawa sutokayo me bawa supokayo me bawa anarata me bawa sawa siri me payacha Kama Sutra Med Sedam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Tade Gaja Vadra Mami Mutsa Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Be. Now we're going to do the purifying speech visualization 5 more times. On Vadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vadrasapa Dino Patita Dido Mebawa Sutokaya Mebawa Supokaya Mebawa Anarata Mebawa Sava Siddhe Me Prayacha Sava Kama Sutra Me Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bhava Maha Samaya Sava Ahum Pe Vadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vadrasapa Dino Patita Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sava Siddhe Me Prayacha Sava Kama Sutra Me Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Aho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dido Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sawasiri Me Payacha Sawakama Sutra Me Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Namaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dido Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Kaya me bawa, anarata me bawa, sawasiri me payacha, sawakama sutra me, chidam sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho, bhagavan, tadagadra vadra mami mucha vadra bawa mahasamaya sava ahum pe. Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dido Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Savasiri Me Prayacha Savakama Sutra Me Chidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Tata Gadra Vadra Mami Mutta Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe. Alright, now we're going to do this is visualizing the mind. Remember, light comes in instantly. We like completely, instantly our body becomes like light, completely made of light. Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Durido Mabawa Sutokaya Mabawa Kaya me bawa, anarata me bawa, sarasiri me payacha, sarakama sutra me, chedam sriyam kuruham, ha ha ho, bhagavan, sawatata gadra vadra mami mucha vadra bawa, mahasamaya sava ahum pe. Om vajrasapa samaya, manupalaya, vajrasapa dinopatita, tiro me bawa, sutukaya me bawa, supukaya me bawa, anarata me bawa, sarasiri me payacha, Kama Sutra Me Chidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Vadra Safa Samaya Manapalaya Vadra Safa Dino Patita Tira Me Bhava Sutukaya Me Bhava Supukaya Me Bhava Anavate Me Bhava Sava Siri Me Prayaja Sava Kama Sutra Me Chidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dira Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sarasiri Me Prayacha Sawakama Sutra Me Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Bhadrasava Samaya Manopalaya Bhadrasava Dinopatita Tirame Bhava Satokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sava Siddhi Me Payaja Sava Kama Suchami Sidham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagawan Sava Tata Gadra Vadra Mami Mutra Pawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahom Pe. And then we'll do the purifying the subtle obscurations, body, speech, and mind, the so-called obstructions to omniscience, doing all three visualizations together. And then at the fifth time we do it, I'll ring the bell. If you have a bell, you can ring it too. But we'll slow it down, that last line. On Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Tino Patita Dvira Me Bhava Satokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sara Sede Me Prayacha Sara Kama Sucha Me Chitam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bhava Samaya Sava Ahom Pe. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Tino Patita Dvira Me Bhava Satokaya Me Bhava Supokaya me bhava, anarata me bhava, sarvasiri me payacha, sarvakama sucha me, siddham sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho bhagavan, sarvatata gadra vadra mami mutsa vadra bhava mahasamaya sava ahum pe. Om vadra sava samaya manapalaya vadra sava dino patita, dhya me bhava, sutukaya me bhava, supukaya me bhava, anarata me bhava, sarvasiri me payacha, sarvakama sucha me, siddham sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho bhagavan savata de gadra vadra mami mutta vadra bhava mahasamaya sava ahum pe. Om vadra sava samaya manapalaya vadra sava dino patita dhya me bhava satokaya me bhava supokaya me bhava anarata me bhava sarvasiri me payacha Chamed Sidham Sriyam Kuraham, ha 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 ho Bhagawan, Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mutsa Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahom Pe. Om Vadra Safa Samaya Manupalaya Vadra Safa Dino Patita Sido Me Bhava Sutukaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sawa Siddhi Me Prayacha Sawa Kama Sucha Me Sidham Sriyam Kuraham, ha 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 ho Bhagawan, Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mutsa Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe. Now, we'll do this part. From the crown of my head, Guru Vajrasattva says, Son of the race, your negativities, obscurations, broken and damaged pledges have been purified. Generate strong faith that they have been purified, completely purified, just as Guru Vajrasattva has said. This is an important time to actually think that you've done something very virtuous and powerful, powerful purification. Now we'll read the next part together. Before Guru Vajrasattva, I vow never again to commit those negative actions from which I can easily abstain, to not commit for a day, an hour, at least a few seconds, those negative actions from which I find it difficult to abstain. Now, I'll read this next visualization. So Guru Vajrasattva is extremely pleased with your pledge. Vajrasattva, father and mother, melt into light and dissolve into you. Your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's body, speech, and mind. So, you know, it is absorbing into you, and you think, okay, you don't visualize yourself as Vajrasattva, but you think, my body, speech, and mind is inseparable from Vajrasattva's body, speech, and mind, which is completely pure. So that's the attitude. If you'd had a Hashtaga Tantra initiation, you could actually visualize yourself as your Guru Yidam. But, for most of us, it's not the case. So just visualize, just think that your body, speech, and mind are inseparable from Vajrasattva's body, speech, and mind. And now we'll do the next part. In emptiness, there is no I, creative negative karma. There is no action of creating negative karma. There is no negative karma created. Now that might be hard to digest, but you might want to think about that. put your mind in that emptiness for a little while, and this way, look at all phenomena as empty. They do not exist from their own side. With this awareness of emptiness, we'll dedicate the merits. But this is where we'll probably stop and maybe do 5 minutes of emptiness meditation here, and really, you know, try to recall what it means. What does emptiness actually mean? You know, we think, okay, my body's sitting here, and my mind is thinking, but you know, where's this I, this sense of I, this sense of a real, reified, concrete, absolute, objective, existing from its own side, all those things that we say, I, where's this real I? It's just a body sitting and a mind thinking. Where's that I, the owner of the body and mind? And we say, that I is unfindable. We are empty of that I. Think about that. Now we'll do the dedication. Due to all the merits of the three times collected by me, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and all other sentient beings, which appear to be real from there, but which are empty, is that a which appear to be real from, I think they should be from their own side, but which are empty, my I, which appears to be real, but is empty, achieve Vajrasattva's enlightenment, which appears to be real, but is empty, and lead all sentient beings who appear to be real, but are totally empty, to that enlightenment which appears to be real, but is empty, self alone, which appears to be real, but is also totally empty, non-existent from there. May the precious Bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success for myself and all other sentient beings, be generated within my own mind and in the minds of all sentient beings without even a second's delay. May that which has been generated be increased. May I and all other sentient beings have Lama Tsongkhapa as our direct guru all our lifetimes, never separated for even a second from the pure path as greatly praised by the conqueror Buddhas. Actualize the complete path, the three principal paths, the two practices of highest yoga tantra, the root of which is guru devotion, within our minds as quickly as possible. Just as the brave Manjushri and Sumantra Bhadra realize things as they are, I dedicate all these virtues in the best way that I may follow after them. What's another dedication of the three times victorious ones gone to bliss have admired as best. In the same way, I also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue so that I may perform good works. Amen. So great. Thank you for your attention. And we were all over the place, but hopefully we touched on the, and, you know, we'll, you know, I'll work to hone my part of it. You can, that much you can count on now. And I'm counting on you guys to be there and give it 100% too. It'll be fun. It'll be really good, really worthwhile.